back to the bin.
Hello and welcome to Back to the Bins. My name is Scott Gardner. I am joined for this episode by the hosts of the Is It Jaws podcast. And before you listen to this episode, I highly encourage you, go listen to the latest episode of their show in which the three of us discuss the Walt Disney classic film, the second Walt Disney full-length animated feature, Pinocchio, because for this episode, we are going to talk about the comic adaptation of said film, Pinocchio. So for this one, we have Mr. Sean Whalen.
I am really glad to be here for this one.
And we have that other guy.
Yeah, I'm kind of happy to be here too.
He's always here.
He never goes home.
I got nowhere else to go. I got nothing else.
So we, you know, in conjunction with doing Pinocchio, I asked, is there a comic adaptation? And Scott said, I'm very glad you asked me that. To which I replied, I withdraw the question.
You know, I cannot remember how I chanced across this article, but I was pretty surprised to find out that, you know, if someone had asked me, you know, what was the first, Disney film to have a comic adaptation, I would have just assumed, and I would probably assume most people would assume, it'd be Snow White. Well, that was the first movie, so it must have had the first adaptation.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
Because it was adapted in a comic book, but it was adapted in a comic strip that was then put together in the comic book, as we discussed when we did our discussion of that adaptation.
Yep.
So it did predate this, but it was not made for a comic book initially.
Correct. Yep. So the first one that was actually made, you know, specifically to be a comic book was actually this one.
And the interesting thing about this is that the creative person on this was Walt Kelly, who eventually became famous for the comic strip Pogo.
Yeah. And Kelly actually worked on the film, which was one of the you know, the big reasons why he got the gig to do this, you know, the comic adaptation or anything. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But yeah, this has a pretty interesting story. I was kind of tempted to read the article, but the article is rather long. So if you just do a Google search, the story is actually called The First Disney Film to Ever Be Adapted into a Comic Book Explained.
I did read the article. It's not that long, Scott, you lazy.
You want me to read it? I'll read it. I don't care.
You don't have to read it now. Now it's too late. You blew it.
I meant read it for the show is what I meant.
Oh, I didn't have time to actually read it.
No, I read the article. I meant read it for the show, but I figured, you know, the listeners are they're a literate bunch. They can go read it for themselves, but it is a really interesting article. There was a lot of stuff in here I didn't know because, you know, despite my great love for Disney and, you know, my desire to have a strong knowledge of all things Disney, you know, one of my huge blind spots is the comics. I'm, you know, it's not my genre when it comes to comics. I like superheroes and certain other things, but you know, the kiddie comics, doesn't really float my boat. So, you know, this was my first time reading this one. By the way, I think I mentioned, I'm almost positive I mentioned when we did Snow White, both the movie and then the comic adaptation, I think I said that Pinocchio was in that book that I told you guys about. It is not. I'm kind of shocked by that, but Pinocchio actually is not in that Disney Classics book. Sean, you went and you bought a copy of that book, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, were you surprised?
Still need to get the Pinocchio comic too.
Yeah, I got to do that after this, right?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, Paul. I forgot. I actually got that Snow White comic. It fell in my lap at a convention for $5, and it's an original. It was like the original printing of that comic.
That's a good score, because Disney comics are very popular. I mean, there is a whole crowd for that.
Right.
And so that's shocking, because it's an original. You know, I mean, that would be something that would.
Yeah. And because I priced it like right after we did that show, I went on eBay looking for a copy of it. And it was, you know, for a cheapskate like me, I was like, nah, I ain't paying those prices for that. I mean, it was one of those like nice to own, but I didn't, you know, have like this burning desire to own it. It was just one of those things like, if I ever find it around. And then sure enough, I was at a show where somebody had a great big box of old, like four colors and that sort of thing. And they were all $5 a piece. And I found that one in there. So I picked it up. For all I know, this might've been in there too, but I don't, you know, judging by this cover, I don't know that I would have realized that this was like the original adaptation just by the nature of the kind of strange cover on this one.
And I questioned the cover when I first observed it. But then when you see the stories, because there are actually two stories in the book, you understand the cover.
Right.
And as loath as Scott is to pre-canned synopsises, we did not prepare a synopsis for this. So I did a quick search, and I found on the Grand Comic database, they have a very, very brief synopsis of each of the stories in here. So I'm going to read those quickly. This had an on sale date of November 30th of 1945. So it was 5 years after the movie came out. The first story is The Wonderful Adventures of Pinocchio. And the synopsis, excuse me, is that the Blue Fairy brings Geppetto's wooden puppet Pinocchio to life. Jiminy Cricket is enlisted as his conscience. Pinocchio is first captured by the evil showman Stromboli, but is rescued by the Blue Fairy. Not learning a lesson, Pinocchio is then enticed to travel with a coachload of boys to Pleasure Island. There they indulge in bad behavior until the boys turn into donkeys. Pinocchio is saved by Jiminy partway through the transformation. In the meantime, Geppetto was swallowed by the whale Monstro while on his way to Pleasure Island to find Pinocchio. And that's where the synopsis ends. The story does go on where he rescues Geppetto and ends up becoming a real boy. The second story in the book is called The Wonderful Misadventures of Donocchio. And it's after reading the story of Pinocchio, Donald wishes he was Pinocchio. The Blue Fairy grants his wish and gives him two more wishes. As Pinocchio, Donald gets involved with Gideon and Foulfellow and ends up being sold to Stromboli. His lack of stage talent helps him to escape when Stromboli flies into a rage. Donald tries to go to Pleasure Island, but the coachman thinks he's a spy and chases him with guns. While he's escaping, he wishes he could switch sizes with Jiminy. After a short chase, Donald wishes he was a real boy again. He ends up back in his own bed, waking from a dream. Or was it? So that's the brief synopsis and the grand comics database with regard to this book. Now, I read this for the purposes of doing this today, and I had some thoughts about it. The first story, the actual Pinocchio story, which is the adaptation of the movie, as we mentioned in the movie review, one of the shortcomings is they never explain how Geppetto ended up in Monstro's belly. And what this comic does is it does give us a little bit more in the way of transition and explaining some things that went on. Mm-hmm. See, Geppetto apparently went out in search of Pinocchio and was trying to go to Pleasure Island, and that's how he ended up in Monstro's belly. There's also some more dialogue in a couple of things that it fleshes out a little bit that we might not get, you know, a full understanding of in the movie, because the movie goes along at a fairly rapid pace. This has a little bit of a chance to give us a little exposition and give us some understanding of some of the characterizations and all. On the other hand, the artwork to me, despite the pedigree of Walt Kelly, struck me as fairly standard fare for a Disney comic adaptation. I remember as a kid, I can't remember what it was, but I remember getting like being on a trip and my dad buying me like a Disney magazine, and it had, you know, it had articles in it, and it had like a 2-page cartoon story, and then it would have more articles, and it would have another cartoon story. And this strikes me as exactly the type of artwork that I would see in that book. There's nothing about it that has the rich depth of, that you get in the movies. So, yeah, you're getting a true picture of the characters, but they're artistically dumbed down a little bit. So that was a little disappointing. And as I was reading through this, I kind of felt like the biggest purpose of this is that it came out in 1945, which predates home video and predates people even having TV sets in many, many homes, in most homes. I think there were very, very few at that time. So this was the perfect, I've seen the movie, I want to relive it in my mind, and I have this to remind me of where the story went. And that's really where I saw it going. And then, you know, as we got through it and we got further to the end of it, and I'm thinking, you know, that my thought hadn't changed. Then I got to the wonderful misadventures of Pinocchio. And I found that to be far more interesting to read. I got a kick out of how Donald was trying to misbehave, and somehow the you know, things were just against him and they weren't letting him. You know, Stromboli kicked him out because he stunk when he tried to perform. And then, you know, they didn't want him to go to Paradise, Pleasure Island, rather, because they thought he was a spy. You know, just I found it to be much more amusing as a parody or a satire of the original story. So that's where I got more of a pleasure out of this one. But, you know, overall, it was entertaining. It's good as a companion piece to the movie, but not a lot more than that. Any thoughts, guys?
For me, well, first of all, have either of you read any of Carl Barks or Don Rosa's duck books?
Very
well. I haven't. I've heard wonderful things about them, but I haven't.
If we have a chance somewhere down the road, you know, on bins, that might be a fun thing to do. I mean, just for the sake of kind of, you know, talking about our Disney conversation, life and it's a tome, but Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck in particular from Don Rosa is absolutely amazing. Where I'm going with that is, though, I'm going to echo everything you're saying about Pinocchio. I had not read that story before this and really enjoyed that quite a bit. The Pinocchio one, it's going back to that one. It's growing up, everything I loved about a good adaptation. What they did was, and you mentioned the exposition, I thought some of the scenes that they decided to flesh out a little differently or use narrative tools to give us a little bit more story, I thought they actually enhanced the film for me in some really good ways. And I think a good adaptation does that. There was nothing there that contradicted the film, felt like it didn't belong. It felt connected to the film. I'm going to agree with you on the artwork 100%. I thought the character designs were good, but one of the things that's, I think, is the charm of the movie and something I particularly enjoyed this time was the layered and depth-filled backgrounds. When you look into Geppetto's workshop, I mean, it's bare. I mean, there's no ornamentation on the desks. There's no, and I get it. I mean, it, you know, how much time was really available to be able to put all of that together, but it's such a beautiful workshop in the film that, like, you can literally, I mean, Scott's got it behind him right now on our screen, which, I mean, you guys aren't seeing it, but the ornamentation, the detail of that, it's something I really loved about Snow White. I really forgot was such a big, important feature of Pinocchio. It's something that I think, you know, that I would have loved to seen a little bit more of, not in every panel, but at least in a couple of really good establishing shots. Of like, this is the workshop. Now we're going to go to the blank panels for the purpose of, you know, we don't have enough time to keep doing that in every single panel. And I get that in comics. That part I was missing. But as far as an issue goes, as far as story, I liked the story told here. I liked the narrative elements from Jiminy, for example, and some of the ways that they expanded out the story. I agree with you on the choice as far as explaining why Pinocchio is going after Geppetto at all and why Geppetto wound up in the belly. I thought this definitely expands on that and does a better job than the film did. And some of the other choices that were in here I thought were just really, really interesting ones that added on to it. The Stromboli sequence, I really liked how that worked out. There were just some good choices in this. I thought as a story, I liked the story more than I liked the artwork.
Yeah, I would definitely have to agree with that. What this really reminded me very strongly of was, you know, I'm not terribly familiar with comic strips, but I have read some. But I remember when, in the very early days of the Star Wars newspaper strip, I think it was the second major story after the introduction of the Star Wars strip. They were simultaneously doing a daily strip, but then also a Sunday strip. And for a time, the daily and the Sunday were telling the exact same story, but using completely different artwork. So basically telling the same story in two slightly different ways, because you had the daily format and then you had the Sunday format, which was usually, 9 to 12 panels, something like that. So the story would be, the dialogue would be slightly different. The characters might all reach the same places and the same conclusions, but in slightly different ways. That's what reading this reminded me of after having just watched the movie, is that you have all the same characters, you have all the same beats, you have all the same environments and set pieces, yet they get there in slightly different ways. The dialogue might be slightly different. Certain things don't happen and other things do happen. So it was really interesting because it does that thing that I love when comic adaptations do, of kind of giving you what I've always jokingly referred to as the DVD extras, the things that didn't make the final cut of the film. So it's interesting both in things that it leaves out that we saw in the film, but then things that it adds in that the movie doesn't have. The big one, of course, being the explanation that I had so wished that the movie had done of explaining how and why did Geppetto wind up in Monstro the Whale. That's explained here. I wish to God I had taken notes when I read this, because there's another one too from the movie that always kind of bugged me a little bit that was never explained in something in the movie that's never explained that this adaptation did explain, but for the life of me, I cannot remember what it was. And I keep flipping back and forth, hoping it'll jump out to me, and I'm just not seeing it here. But there was at least one other thing from the film that is explained in this adaptation. So I'm with Sean. Story-wise, I really enjoyed it because it fleshes out the movie in some aspects. And I like kind of the alternate universe way that you can approach reading this, because some sequences are completely different than how they play out in the movie. Like Pleasure Island in this is very different. Pleasure Island in this is like Candyland. So you never get like Lampwick smoking cigar, Lampwick and Pinocchio smoking cigars in the pool hall, shooting pool. They never shoot pool. They never even go to a pool hall. Instead, they're in this weird like Candyland environment where there's like giant ice cream and marshmallow trees and gingerbread men, and they set fire to a schoolhouse, all these different. So, again, telling the same story, but in two completely different ways. So that part of it was really fascinating to me. On the flip side, it was really weird, almost dreamlike, how the art both looks just like the movie as far as the character models, but then looks so slapdash at the same time.
Yeah.
because the colors are all off. The colors to this look like, that up too. Yeah, it's almost, some of the pages are almost like a photo negative because the colors are all wrong on almost every single page for the characters' outfits and everything. It has this weird pastel kind of coloring to it. The backgrounds are extremely minimal, which is odd for a movie that has very, very rich painted backgrounds for most of the film. And I don't know. It's just, it's really weird because, I mean, I like the artwork and I simultaneously dislike the artwork because it's very well drawn, but it's like a very well drawn coloring book. It just, it's very weird art-wise, you know, artistically. So it really lends more to, you know, the visual look of it really lends more to, oh, this is a kiddie comic. And so it's easily dismissed. And that's kind of a shame because, you know, when we looked at the Snow White adaptation, that adaptation in its own way is as beautiful as the film is. I mean, that was a beautifully illustrated comic adaptation. This is not, unfortunately. It's not that it's not well drawn. It is. It's just the lack of detail, the funky, weird coloring. This really strongly reminds me of like a Charlton comic. And mm-hmm. I don't mean that in a good way. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it artistically, it's a really odd duck.
I saw a similarity, and you know, you brought it up in what you just said that kind of brought it out of my mind, that it almost feels like coloring book art. It almost looks, when you look at it, it almost looks like a coloring book page that was colored by a kid who could do well, you know, stays in the lines and really makes it nicely done. But it doesn't have that depth and that richness right. that you want. And not only that, but some of the colors are just wrong. Like, you know,
right.
they're not even the true to the what we had in the movie. And then I'm looking at the artwork and I'm seeing like when they're out in the street and there's the cobblestone street, the lack of detail on the street is almost striking. Like it calls your attention to it instead of having it just blend because that, you know, there's a cobblestone here, a cobblestone there, but it's not consistent, you know, on the road like it should be. And I don't know if that was, you know, if they thought they were achieving something artistically by doing that, but as far as I'm concerned, it failed in that respect.
Where I thought you were going was, you know, the kid colored within the lines, but did you ever have like that friend or that sibling or whatever? Like they did a beautiful coloring job, but every single color was wrong that they chose to color.
Yeah, that's part of it. The colors are wrong. And they're incomplete because like I said, when you look to the street scenes, there's a lot of white
yeah.
that just didn't get done. And I don't understand the reasoning behind that.
Nobody gave them the 32 or 64 crayon box. Because it's totally what the issue was. Your color analogy is so spot on. It is. You've got that like small crayon box that doesn't really have the right shades of anything.
Right.
And you're marveling at your friend who has the 64 crayons and they've got all the different shades and they're able to get it just right because they have that.
Yep. I've got purple, orange, pink, and sky blue. There you go. Run. You know, that's it. That's what you got. Because I'm looking at, I think Paul and I are looking at the same page here with like the ice cream streets. And is that the page you're looking at? Where it's like Pinocchio's walking away from like the giant ice cream thing there and Jiminy's going, friend? I mean, every color on that page is wrong.
I think the coloring is slightly, and I only mean slightly, better in the second story. There's points where the color looks a little bit richer. But, you know, only slightly better. And there's, you know, the Pinocchio outfit is still the wrong color. The Jiminy Cricket outfit is still the wrong color. You know, the characters, you know, I don't know why they would use the wrong colors as they do.
Can I say something about that second story, though? Because it's funny you're mentioning that, and I'm going to say the same thing I said about the main story. When you're looking at Pinocchio, we talked about some of this on the Pinocchio episode, as far as a sequel to Pinocchio, and would we even want one, and what would that look like? I will say, if you're going to do a sequel to Pinocchio, where you're giving us some continuity to some of the villains and to Jiminy Cricket, the thing that Pinocchio did was it actually picked up after Pinocchio. So this occurs sometime afterwards for every one of these characters and does give us another arc with these characters. And I really like throwing Donald into that mix and making that work. From a storytelling perspective, both of these stories, I will say, as far as narrative, I really enjoyed the narrative being delivered here with all of them, whereas the art was a little weaker in the story. I will say the real personality of this is I could hear Jiminy Cricket saying those lines. They were very well written, even when he calls him Danoke and all those kind of pieces. It like felt like Jiminy saying them. And I think that's something that I would have appreciated then. And I do appreciate now. It's taking me back to, I liked film adaptations and television adaptations for all the reasons we're staying here. You didn't have the DVD. You didn't have VHS. If you were lucky, the film was re-released in the theaters and you get another shot to see it. This delivers that kind of storytelling while adding more. But I liked Pinocchio quite a bit. And I was surprised at how much I really enjoyed that story because it felt like it continued on.
Back in those days, you know, you wanted, as a kid, you wanted to have the Viewmaster to relive the story because that would actually have, you know, scenes. One of the things, and this is purely to me, but one of the things I've always had a little bit of trouble with is Donald Duck in comic books, because the dialogue, I never hear Donald's voice in the dialogue.
Agreed.
So it almost feels like it's a different character than what we see in the cartoons.
And I mentioned Carl Barks and Don Rosa. I think, you know, there's a certain establishment of the kind of adventurer that he is. I think what you've got to, what you get from these comic book adaptations of Donald Duck is more of the idea that Donald has some moral issues. and he's not, you don't hate Donald, but you know Donald's going to be involved in some kind of a scheme or something like that and get himself into some trouble and some shenanigans. And I think it does that well, but I don't hear the traditional Donald Duck voice that we hear from his shorts, because I'm a huge fan of the classic Donald Duck shorts. And that is, I'm not hearing that here. I think it's a hard thing to convey on the comic book page. I think in the same way that you're going to get it. Right. But I would agree. I was referencing how much I love the dialogue throughout this. And I do love Donald's dialogue, but I'm hearing Jiminy Cricket's dialogue, Honest John's, Gideon's, Coachman, you know, Stromboli, all of them I thought were nailed. Donald is Donald in comics, to your point. I'm glad you're pointing that out.
And Donald, one of the things I do like is he breaks the fourth wall.
Yes.
It's the part where Jiminy says, but they're crooks. They'll outsmart an innocent young boy like you. And Donald's response is, outsmart me? That's the first laugh in this book. I like the fact, you know, as you said, Sean, that he's got moral issues. You know, he has read the story, knows the story, and is looking to be exploited.
Yes, because he thinks Pinocchio made a mistake.
So I did get a kick out of that. I thought the artwork on Stromboli was probably the strongest part of the book, as far as the artistically.
Yeah, he looks good.
And then we have the same thing we had with the Snow White, where there's two pages in here that are the pink and white, which I guess are the inside covers.
Yeah.
So the art, you know, the art color, for whatever reason, they couldn't do it the same on those. And I don't understand why, if you could have the color on the cover, full color, why couldn't you have that on the inside of the cover?
That was a common thing with these four colors, and I don't understand. Was it a stylistic choice? Was it to, you know, as like a mark of the brand or something, or was it literally some sort of shortcoming of their printing process? But I don't understand it, because on the other side of the page, typically the back page, and you can see that in the scan here that we have for this one, typically the back page had the best looking art of the entire book as far as like how the printing looked, because everything's very refined.
Yes, the back cover and the front cover are one side, and then the inside back cover and inside front cover are the other side, which is the pink and white.
Right.
But I have to think that it's not an artistic choice, that it's a cost-cutting choice.
Yeah, that could be.
To do the coloring on the front and back covers is more expensive, and they felt the need to swallow that expense because you needed the cover to attract buyers.
There you go.
For the book.
Yeah.
And as long as you were doing the front cover, you might as well do the back cover along with it, because it's the same print.
And to get that in the book, you'd actually need to put in another two pages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They weren't going to do that. So I came into this before we started recording, Scott, and I was saying this is going to be a very short episode. I don't know how much we have to add to this.
No, I really don't have a whole lot. I would be curious to know, what version of the film, because I mean, yeah, as you pointed out, this is 5 years after the film came out. So why is it so far off from the film? Now, granted, I mean, again, I know that they weren't sitting there and like watching the movie, you know, along with it, because this predates, you know, home video and all that sort of thing by, you know, a long margin. So I get that they're not literally sitting there and watching the movie and just drawing the film. But I mean, there are significant things that are quite different from the film. And I just wonder, what's the nature of that? You know, are they going off like an earlier version of the story, or is this somebody's attempt to rectify things from the movie that bugged them, or, you know what I mean? I just wonder why some things are so very different from the film.
They washed their clothes in an abrasive way back then. It's 5 years later. Those colors are going to change.
If you go to the last page of the first story, middle panel on the left, if you changed the word balloons there, you could have it be that, you know, Pinocchio woke up and is zombified and Geppetto is terrified of him. Because look at his eyes in that panel.
Yeah. Yeah, his eyes are, yeah, that is kind of freaky.
No wonder why there's like kind of Team Figaro on that one. Let's bat that thing away.
Wait a minute. I'm just noticing. Give me one second here, because I'm just noticing something.
What do you got?
I'm just flipping to make sure that I'm actually right about this. I think they eliminated a character here, and I didn't catch it before. Give me a second. I'm almost
done. Are you talking about Cleo?
Cleo, yeah. Is she in the beginning?
Until you said they eliminated a character, it didn't occur to me. But as soon as you said it, I knew who you meant. I don't think she's in this.
She is not. She is not. No, I just went through the whole book. Cleo is completely excised from this. That's weird. That is.
Well, I have to say, I think the charm of Cleo would be lost in a comic.
That's true. I also noticed that it does add a character. Now, they never name the guy. I named him Snidely Whiplash because that's who I think he looks like. Actually, he looks like a cross between Snidely Whiplash and Gargamel. But the pages are not numbered. But on the page where the coachman is hiding behind a tree, and he's talking about how, you know, the boys are having a, you know, they're making fools of themselves, and pretty soon they're all going to change to donkeys. He's talking to a dude standing next to him that, you know, looks like your stereotypical, you know, mustache twirling theatrical villain. Mm-hmm. Who the hell is this guy? Because he's not in the movie.
So no, he's in two panels.
Yep. And then on the next page, is it the next page, last panel of the next page, you've got the coachman barking orders to a couple of his henchmen here, and they look very much like just human guys with like a full body suit with a mask to it. Now, the ones that were in the movie to me looked more monster like. I imagine that they were some sort of like creatures. But this makes it look like it's just, you know, it's just people with outfits on. But I like to look at them more in the movie. They had more of a supernatural appearance in the movie.
Can you guys do me a favor real quick? That page that says The Wonderful Adventures of Pinocchio, the one that is the back of the front cover.
Uh-huh.
Take a look at that artwork on there. Now, take a look at Jiminy Cricket on there. Then flip the page and take a look at it with the coloring issues that we're talking about.
Right.
I honestly think this story would have been better served if they stuck with the lack of color that we're
given. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I actually think so. When I look at it, I look at the character design of Jiminy and things like that. I'm looking at that page. I'm like, that's a really good Jiminy Cricket right there.
Yeah.
I actually think the artwork is better served without having the color errors that we're talking about and just sticking with a more stable palette of, you know, hey, we only had pinks to work with or something like that.
Right.
Because I really do. I actually, when I look at it, I actually think the character designs, if you take out the color, the character designs aren't bad at all. It's when you're starting to add in some of the coloring choices and beady eyes on Pinocchio that you start having problems.
Right. No, I agree.
Yeah, I agree. I think so too. I think it would. I think the coloring in this stands out as bad. So if you muted it to that pink, you wouldn't have that. Because the artwork looks fine.
Yeah.
I think we could use a little bit more in the way of backgrounds. No question in my mind. But the actual characters look fine.
With the exception of the blue fairy, I did notice that the blue fairy looks pretty funky on most all the pictures of her. There's a couple of them where she actually looks like a child, like a really young girl. But otherwise, no, I agree. Otherwise, I think the characters are all pretty much on model and look really well. Again, they could be a little more detailed and a little more fleshed out, but no, I think the biggest disservice to the art in this is the miscoloring. It's incredibly distracting.
Yeah, I agree.
I couldn't agree more on everything you're saying about the blue fairy as far as the choices with her artwork and stuff like that. There's times where I'm kind of like, oh, it's a little creepy. But I will say one of the things that I think the story did very well with her is I think the movie alludes to her having a greater involvement. This spells it out. I think some very interesting ways that I thought, like, I think enhances the story of the film versus nothing here. I felt contradictory to the film. It felt like it only enhanced the story that we see in the actual film itself.
Right.
If you look at the coloring on the cover, if they had done that in the book,
yes,
it would have made the book so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm trying to look before I close out that thought on the back cover and compare that. Yeah, the back cover, the color looks better too. It's more rich.
Yeah, absolutely.
That had to have been a printing issue at the time, you know, as far as I think there's to the point of expense. I'm sure like your bang for the buck is if you capture them with the front and the back cover, you got them.
Well, I got to think that they did not produce this thinking anyone over 50 would be reading it. And if they were, they would be reading it to a child. Not for their own pleasure. So you know, I guess you have to look at it somewhat with that type of a thought process. I think, you know, once you accept the fact that the, you know, that there's the two stories in this book and it explains why Donald is on the cover, I think it's a pretty cool looking cover, but again, just like in the inside, I think it needs a background. Although that was very common with the Disney comics, as I can recall, to have the just the characters and no background.
Right.
So, I think the cover is very, I think it's pretty solid. And I think if I were, you know, buying this for a child, or if I was a child, you know, I would want this based on the cover. So I think the cover works well. I'm going to say the cover gets a solid B. The interior art, I'm bothered by the fact that I'm going to give it separate ratings, because I'm going to say the coloring gets an F. I think it's terrible. The actual artwork, the character models look good, and I think even where they don't look quite as good, if they were in black and white, they'd look better. But the failing is, again, that I think it needs a little bit more detail, a little bit more background, a little bit more depth. So it's not, you know, that it's not just the color. But I'm going to say if it was colored right, this would be probably a B minus. I mean, it's good artwork, I think. The story, I like the fact that it fleshes stuff out. I like the fact that, like Scott said, it's got the DVD extras. And I really got a kick out of the Danocchio story and just, you know, his motivations being what they were. So that made me chuckle. So even if they hadn't intended it to be written for somebody of my advanced years, I still got a kick out of it. So I'm going to say the first story, I'm going to say a B for the adaptation. And the second story, I'm going to say an A for the humor that it gave me. So overall, I would say this book is a B.
I think I'm pretty close to you. I do like the cover. Again, like you, I think it could benefit from having an actual background as opposed to just, just a blue color. But the figure work is very good. The coloring is very good as well. And most of it's pretty accurate, unlike the story inside. So yeah, it is a good, an eye-catching cover. I think it would work, for the audience that it's intended for and everything. So yeah, the cover, I'll say, I think it's a B cover. I do like the way it's colored and shaded and everything. The interior art, yeah, I'm with Sean. It is a shame that they didn't just go with this art on the inside front cover throughout the whole book, because I think that looks and works much better than the rest of the art through the book. So if they'd stuck with that, I think they would have been fine. It's the just really odd coloring through the story that's the thing that detracts the most. So I like what you did, Paul, with, for the first time, separating, the grades of the color and the art. I think that's a good way to judge this, because, yeah, the coloring is really bad. It really, really detracts from the art. So, yeah, artistically in this, I mean, the fairest I can be on it is a C minus. It's just, most of the art's pretty good, coloring aside, most of the art's pretty good. There's a couple wonky bits with a couple of the character models, but overall it's not bad. It could be fleshed out a little bit more with detail and that sort of thing, but it services the story and everything. It really comes down to that terrible coloring. And then the story, I enjoyed the story. I like this alternate universe telling of the story that kind of fleshes things out a little bit. I wish to God I could find whatever the other thing was that jumped out to me as I read this, that explains that from the film. I've been flipping back and forth constantly while we've been talking about this, trying to find whatever that other thing was, and I just never did chance across it again. But yeah, if you actually do read this, I like that. I like that, you know, it helped explain some things and added some elements to the story as well. So yeah, it was interesting from that perspective. So story-wise, I'd say overall, would you say a B minus? I think a B minus is a pretty fair grade on this. I enjoyed it.
So when I'm looking at the front and the back cover of this one, and I'm going to say the inside for both of them, I actually liked the muted colors in there. I actually find that the whole entire artwork benefited from that, even the backgrounds, which I hate the backgrounds in this, the rest of the book. But I feel like the muted tones don't draw your attention to the lack of detail in there. So I think it just serves it so much better and lets you focus on the character designs and lets you focus on the choices they did make for creating backgrounds in there in a way that is very complementary to them versus drawing your attention to what's missing. Whereas the colors, I feel like when you get into the book, the colors really damage the backgrounds. The coloring choices really draw your eye to them. They make walls stand out, things like that, in ways you don't want it to in this book. And I put a firm F on the backgrounds. Character designs, I kind of want to separate them a little bit for me because the character designs are a mixed bag. Some of them I absolutely adore. I feel like the character expressions, the action that's going on are great. Other pages, it's like they make bizarre, almost creepy choices. And it's inconsistent. So I'm going to give that a C. Just because I feel like I really do enjoy it in some areas, and other areas I'm like, oh, what were you thinking? Why did you do that? And, I wish that those things didn't happen. The stories, both of them, I adored. I feel it's something with Disney comics. A lot of times they're tailored to a certain audience age, but I feel like the best of Disney comics are ones that have enough depth to them and storytelling and narrative that they're great for your older fans. And I found that in I mentioned Carl Barks and Don Rosa. I feel like their work shows the depth. And even Floyd Gufferson, the Disney, and I'm probably butchering his name, but the early Mickey strips actually had some really strong stories in them. And I like that kind of stuff. So I'm finding that even though I'm, like you, Scott, very much a firm superhero fan in my comic preferences, I'm finding that I'm a lot of surprise in some of the Disney stories. I loved the story in this. I thought it was really, really good and really, really fun. The story part, I give a B. I'm actually going to agree with you guys. I think it is a B minus for me as well. I think maybe some of our areas where we skirt off is why we wound up there and what our ratings were on some of that. But it was almost there. you had the script and you just didn't deliver on it.
All right, so that's our spotlight on the Pinocchio comic book. I hope everybody enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed doing the research and recording this episode. Next week, I guarantee you we'll have very different books than this. I don't know what we're going to have, but it will be different.
Pinocchio 2.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Sean, for joining us for this.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiMonzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.